Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to another episode of Mystery on the Rocks. We're now doing our Hollywood miniseries.
Yes.
Yeah. For those of you just joining us, it's a show where we drink cocktails and solve unsolved crimes. That's the show. There's no other bells and whistles. I keep trying to make an intro where it's like, we shake it up and it's a cocktail. And it's like, no, the show is cocktails, mysteries, and Suze does stuff as well.
I do things. And we've got a guest with us. It's Eartha Kitt.
I've got, I can't believe you're keeping Eartha Kitt.
I wouldn't let my mum throw out Eartha Kitt.
That's amazing.
If anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, last week we met our new co-host. It's a dried up bit of lettuce that I found on the ground.
Amazing.
But she's so strong.
That's
right. Look at her though, she's so strong, and her name's Eartha Kitt.
I feel like you're going to get to the point where it's going to be dried out so much, and she's so strong that it'll be able to be used as an untraceable murder weapon.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I choke a bitch on it.
It'll be real sharp. You'll just like jab someone right in an artery.
I think the murder weapon must have been some kind of rapier or something. I don't know what.
Yeah. It's the hardest substance known to man, and I'm just like in my car with Eartha Kitt strapped into the passenger seat going, God, you're strong. You're so strong.
Wait a minute, who's that just come in?
Hey. Oh my goodness.
You're not allowed in. Wait, yes you are. Pubs are open.
Pubs are open again.
Apparently, there's no social distancing necessary. Hooray, coronavirus is over.
That looks like the listener to me. Hello,
it
listener.
Oh,
hello.
Hello, welcome. It's 2 meters. 2 meters, please.
We want to live.
We'd like to, thank you.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that Greg's have put, please stay 2 meters apart. That's the equivalent of 15 sausage rolls.
Oh, that's nice.
Kind of sweet, isn't it?
That's cute. And I can imagine that many.
What you need to do, what's 2 meters? That's what, 3 Suzes? 4 Suzes?
Yeah, about 3 maybe.
15 sausage rolls or 3 Suze Kempners. Hey, listener, get your hands off Eartha Kitt. She's not a piece of meat, she's a piece of dried up lettuce.
So what are we drinking?
What have you got, Masood?
This here. Oh, starting with me. Oh, dear.
Sorry.
I'm not ready.
We can start with me if you want. Or start with me.
I'd like to.
I don't mind either. None of us mind.
I made one up because after the Marmite drink, really, actually, since you gave us that chili lime, and then I had that chili cactus in Freud in central London.
Mm.
Like, I think I've got a taste for savoury cocktails.
Oh, welcome Chris, to the dark side, my friend.
Chris has just got a big thing of OXO.
So what I've not
with a carrot in it.
Not quite, but not a million miles away.
All right.
What this is, I kind of made it up. I've like a mixture of two different.
Look at that! That is jet black as well. Well, on the camera,
it just looks like a glass of Coke.
Yeah, it's like Chris has just
so
gone.
What I'm, it is
that so you've got half of Pepsi.
It's whiskey, lemon juice, soy sauce, tamarind syrup, and then it's topped up with beer, and then
what?
And then the rim and the garnish is a smoked salt and arbol-y chili flakes rim.
Oh my god!
What kind of beer is it?
Just lager.
Okay. What do you call that, Chris?
It's sort of so like a Michelada is the tomatoey thing that's topped up with beer.
Yeah.
And then the one that I was looking at, the whiskey, the lemon, chili rim, that's called apparently a funky chicken.
A funky chicken?
I don't know what to call it.
How about a...
I might call it a wing in it.
Wing in it.
No,
I like that
works,
that.
Yeah.
I like that.
But the rim is properly spicy and smoky. And then the drink is quite sweet because of the tamarind.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's lovely.
I've made up a drink, but I don't...
Wait.
I bet this is already a thing, though.
What is it?
I couldn't remember how to make an old-fashioned.
Yeah.
And I couldn't be fucked to Google it either. Mm. So I remember they got sugar in.
Yeah.
So I put some whiskey in this glass and some sugar and some ice.
Yeah.
And then I poured in a bit of Grand Marnier. What's that?
That's not quite an old-fashioned, but you're not far off. You're not far
okay,
off.
Okay, cool.
Because an actual old-fashioned will be sugar, and then you put bitters on that, and then you'll...
Bitters sort of on the sugar.
Then you'll muddle it up, and then you'll put the whiskey in with the... And then you'll put a little orange peel in
there. Oh, so no orange liqueur. It's nice. I mean...
I like it,
and it's not weird. Also, all I've done since Friday is watch Hamilton and listen to Hamilton. So... Oh. I'm going to call it a sit down, Adams, you fat motherfucker. Yeah, what are you drinking, Masood?
This is a Bijou, but this is a Ritz, the Ritz version. So from the Ritz Hotel version. So we've had...
It's got Ritz crackers in it.
Yes, I just crushed... Well, I didn't have any Ritz crackers, so I crashed some of those... what are they
called?
Mini cheddars.
I crushed some of those tuck biscuits. It's a tuck biscuit trifle.
It's a Oh, God.
Chris is like, savoury.
Yeah.
Tuck biscuits, you'll say. So we've had a Bijou on the show, but we made it with green chartreuse, if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what made it. So Bijou meaning jewel or jade jewel in French, I think it is.
Okay.
Like this is the Ritz version, which has gin, half an ounce of dry vermouth, a little bit of orange liqueur, and 2 dashes of orange bitters, and then you just stir it up. So it's very, it's pretty close to a martini. It's very close to a martini. It's sort of...
Okay.
It's a variation, but it's enough... away, enough steps away from it that it's not quite the same. It's nice. It's a nice drink.
Sounds nice.
Very good. It does sound good.
This is getting me smashed already. There's only whiskey and beer in here that's alcoholic, so it's a double whiskey.
Oh.
And then it's topped up with beer.
And then it's just loads of beer.
And then, there's the lemon juice and all the savoury stuff. And it tastes delicious, but I feel like I'm drinking it faster than I should. And it's probably just... And also, it's like it burns on the way down because of the chilli on the rim. So that's how drunk I am. I laughed at that.
So, Chris.
Yeah.
We're in Hollywood.
It's the 20s.
You know, I'm not allowed to be there, of course, at least in the company of you two, unless I'm carrying bags or something. So
unless
that's
we're on the golf course and you're like, bag of Vants. Fucking bag of Vants, Masood.
None of you dress up like a ghost, okay?
So let's rewind a little bit. 1921, Fatty Arbuckle is arrested and tried for the death of Virginia Rapp 3 times. Mm-hmm. The following year, 1922, William Desmond Taylor is found shot in the back. And all of this compounds the original scandal from 1920 of the young actress that died of a drug overdose. And all of a sudden now, Hollywood being seedy and immoral has become a big thing in the press.
Okay.
2 years after William Desmond Taylor's death in 1924, pioneering film producer Thomas H. Ince dies after a party on the yacht of media mogul William Randolph Hearst.
Citizen Kane.
There's a film that's been made, 2001. Eddie Izzard plays Charlie Chaplin and Kirsten Dunst is in it, I think. And it's called The Cat's Meow. And that's based on this this story.
Oh, yes, we've talked about... We've mentioned this film,
Now, Thomas H. Ince, not only was he a pioneering film producer, he was pretty much the guy that defined what the role of a film producer was as we know it now.
Okay.
Because he was...
For those of us who don't know... What does a film producer do?
They say things like, if we get a Ned Benning, we'll get a reasonable opening weekend, but if we can get Cher.
I want to know what that movie is.
Hey, I've got one word for you. Guess who's available? Cher. And the director's eyes go like, wee, 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 wee. He's like, but I had my heart set on a Ned Benning. Oh, let me tell you something. Cher. That's producers talking.
Yeah, as if Cher and Annette Bening have got the same type.
I mean, that's why I want to see the movie. I want to know what role they're both going for.
Who do you think should play Will Ferrell's father in this Eurovision film? Well, we were thinking Pierce Brosnan.
Mm-mm. It's Cher.
It's Cher.
Hey, we couldn't get Annette Bening or Cher, but guess who's available? I can't remember her name. Oh, shit. I fucked it. Hang on, I'll say that again. Oh shit, I just thought it'd be really funny if it was her. Hang on.
She's Googling the name.
You'll really laugh when I tell you who I was talking about. Why can't I remember a name? That's so bad. Okay. Annette Bening's not available. Oh, shoot. Neither is Cher. Damn it. That was your choice. Yes. But guess who is available? Angelica Houston.
That was worth it.
That was so
That unbelievable.
None of that was funny. None of that was funny.
No, that was
I think that's funnier with all of the not remembering the name. I think it's only funny as a take two. I'm leaving it all in.
It's not my fault. I've only listened to Hamilton for 4 days, and also I ate bad hummus earlier. Now my burps taste of cardboard. So this fucking piece of shit fell off a yacht.
He didn't fall off a yacht.
Oh.
No, you're thinking of Robert Maxwell.
love him.
He didn't even die on the yacht. He died after the party on the yacht.
He became severely ill
on the yacht, and then he died afterwards.
I see.
Now, it was William Randolph Hearst's yacht, and I feel that that's important, not only because that's where it happened, but also because what happened afterwards is open to conjecture and speculation. And it's as if some things might have been covered up.
Okay.
And the person that would have been able to do that is an owner of a media empire like William Randolph Hearst. Before we get back to Thomas H. Ince, William Randolph Hearst was like the king of fake news. Between him and Pulitzer, who still got a prize named after him, when they ran their newspapers, they deliberately stoked up tensions between America and Spain.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I have heard stories about Pulitzer actually being quite a piece of shit.
Yeah, so the Spanish-American War, it happened at the end of the 1800s because they went into Cuba.
Right.
But William Randolph Hearst and Joseph Pulitzer, they both stoked up the tensions and they used sensationalist and sometimes just blatantly untrue headlines to get their way. And there's a famous story which some people have refuted, but it's a quote you might have heard of, because William Randolph Hearst had sent a photographer that he, or like an artist, to go to Cuba to document everything. And the photographer, he was an artist called Frederick Remington, he telegrammed William Randolph Hearst to say everything's quiet in Cuba, there's not going to be a war. And then apparently William Randolph Hearst wrote back to him and said, "Please remain. You provide the pictures. I'll provide the war."
Fuck off. Are you serious?
Have you ever heard that quote before? I think it was furnished. I think it's been misquoted as provide. I think the original quote was, "You furnish the pictures. I'll furnish the war."
Furnish is even better.
But that was basically kind of what William Randolph Hearst was purported to have said. And then by stoking up the tensions, there was indeed a war.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of got their way. So it was already a case of like the media. Like about 20 years before Hollywood started to fall apart at the seams with all of the scandals, the press already had a control over a lot of stuff. And that's why they were able to, they seized on this seedy underbelly of Hollywood.
It's interesting to sell newspapers. That, like, you sort of said that about the fake news thing. You said like, oh, they sort of use fake news. And this idea of fake news, it feels like everyone thinks it's this new thing that the Russians have invented. It's like, no, it's fucking been around forever. And I imagine even back in the 20s, it's like, no one's going to check because no one fucking cares or has a computer. So it doesn't matter.
Right.
Back then, it had another name, yellow journalism.
Oh, is it going to end up being racist?
Yeah, I feel like that's going to come up again.
No.
It's
become known now as tabloid journalism. It was sort of like sensationalist stuff rather than research stuff. It was written from the heart rather than the head.
That's how he made his initial fortune, wasn't it?
Absolutely, Hearst. Yeah.
It's in Citizen Kane, just printing headlines like, "The president's neck is missing."
There were other stories that they kind of just fabricated, or at least there was like a kernel of truth, and then they made it, they warped it and distorted it. And so because of that, William Randolph Hearst became one of the most powerful men in the world. And it was on his yacht. The yacht was called the...
The Dirty Lady.
I think it was called like the Onegin.
Oh, Onegin. Onegin is an old story about a guy who's in a relationship with a woman, and he leaves her and she's heartbroken. And he returns 20 years later and she's settled for a different guy. And he decides he wants to be with her, and she very bravely tells him no, even though she's still in love with him. And that's the story of Onegin. I've seen a ballet on it. It was boring.
Well, the yacht was called the Oneida.
Oh. I looked smart there.
You've got a boat.
Okay, so Thomas Ince Was born in 1880, so at the time he died, he was 44. He found his way in the movie business. D.W. Griffith was an early contact that he made, and they worked together a lot. And Thomas Ince was one of the first people to, I think he was the first person to have a studio, a whole movie studio that was his name. And he bought a ranch that became like a huge movie studio. He turned into a huge movie studio, and he built like standing sets and all of that. He became known actually as the godfather of the Western. Like, he kind of like pioneered the Western as a genre of film. He ended up sort of like working with D.W. Griffith even at the early stage of his career. He directed short films with Mary Pickford. And this is cool. I didn't know this, but they were sent to Cuba. We're going back to Cuba again, but it's unrelated. They were sent to Cuba to make these short reel films out of the prying eyes of Thomas Edison, who was trying to take over the whole movie studio system.
It was that early. It's crazy, isn't it? Because they were like this competition between him with his kinetoscope.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Because this was after him and Tesla, wasn't it? When they were just still...
I think Tesla might have died by then.
Oh, yeah.
Probably a bit after.
Because it's after he'd killed fucking full African elephants and fucking amazing, dogs and
he's
stuff.
Like, yeah. Look how well my electricity works. It can kill this entire elephant.
What have you done?
We believe you. We believe you. Fucking hell, mate.
I don't think you do believe me. Bring in another elephant.
Bring another, yeah.
I can see you all doubting me. You might have thought that elephant had underlying health conditions, but it didn't. I'll prove it to you. Healthy elephant. Look at this.
He's don't want to watch the elephant die. We'll see about that. And it dies and they're like, we didn't want to see that. Didn't you?
No. We all clearly stated that we definitely did not want to see an elephant die. Throw the switch. How many elephants does this guy have?
Oh my God.
Rule of three.
and he arrived in a Citroen 2CV. How do you fit all them elephants in it?
My next machine can shrink elephants.
Get me my elephant in big enough.
He got drawn to doing westerns straight away. He loved doing that. And then his ambition sort of like started to be bigger than the confines he was working in. There was this ranch in California that when he turned it into the movie studio, it ended up being called Triangle Ranch because him and D.W. Griffith and Max Sennett formed Triangle Productions. But before that, it was called Inceville. When he first bought it, he named it Inceville.
It sounds like every SimCity I've ever made is usually called Masoodville.
And that was where he built the first movie studio.
I see.
Which gave a lot of jobs to the industry. People would live on the ranch as well. They would live in Inceville and then they would make films. The crew would make films.
I see. It was a proper operation.
This is where all of my SimCities fell short because they became unlivable because of garbage and legal gambling. Continue, Chris, please. Let's not talk about my terrible city management skills.
Well, because he built this little village that also functioned as a movie studio, it meant that he became this sort of like role as what we now know as producer. So he ended up...
So he created the role.
Well, kind of, yeah. So when you look at Marvel Studios, right, which is just like a cookie cutter of film after film after film after film, and they all have a very, very similar identity. You can tell a Marvel film when you see one.
Of course.
Yes.
It was kind of like that, and it was all down to him. So he was employing directors and writers and stuff. Occasionally he'd write and direct himself, but it was very much all coming from him and trickling down.
Get out of here. This is Inceville, not Shitsville.
American film critics hated the films.
Why did they hate them? Were they like really pulpy?
But they loved them in Europe.
Oh, they were sexy.
Or they were good. They were just plain good.
He made a film in 1913 called The Battle of Gettysburg. And it was five reels long. And it helped.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, and it helped bring in the idea of, get this, a feature-length film.
Oh,
right.
Shit.
So this predates The Birth of a Nation by 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I bet Birth of a Nation doesn't exist without Battle of Gettysburg.
Probably not.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, we're going to get onto it a bit later on. But D.W. Griffiths followed up Birth of a Nation with a film I think called Intolerant.
Yes. Yeah. As like a clapback against all the people who was like, your film was racist.
But but that was in direct competition with one of Ince's films. Ince's film wiped the floor with it. With Birth of a Nation, the story is told now that it helped bring about the Ku Klux Klan again.
Mm. Yeah, it was like a resurgence, I think we said.
It also wasn't universally loved. Like, it caused riots at the time. People hated it for its depictions of black people. So at the time, people hated it for that.
Mm. You know, we think that it's like, oh, well, back then everyone was racist. Like, no, people probably saw Birth of a Nation's like, what the hell is this shit?
Yeah, what the...
The Birth of a Nation was a box office success because I suppose like people would go and see a film because it was a fucking film.
Intolerance
was a total flop.
D.W. Griffith and Max Sennett, they partnered with Ince after Ince's solo success to form Triangle Studios. It was built on West Washington Boulevard using the money made from The Birth of a Nation.
Okay, that's not great. It's kind of like Miami Skyline being built on blood money. Yeah.
It was one of the first, what they call vertically integrated film companies, and it combined production, distribution, and theatre operations all under one roof.
So that hadn't been done before then?
I think it was like a very new idea.
Because that's fucking expensive to do all that.
And then it became like the hottest studio, the most dynamic studio in Hollywood.
Okay.
And they attracted people like Mary Pickford, Fatty Arbuckle, Douglas Fairbanks.
Oh, all the big names.
They produced like the Keystone Cops films.
So everyone like, we've talked about.
So it sounds like they were very much like the frat pack. They were like the Judd Apatow of their day, making Step Brothers and stuff, and people went fucking nuts for him. But the critics were like, it's just Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly shouting, who cares? And then I'm there going, ha, very good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Step Brothers is great. I love Step Brothers so much. It's so funny.
He had this look in his eyes.
So while he'd ever seen everything that was made at Inceville, because there was three of them this time, at Triangle, he only oversaw a few. Or like some of them, a fraction, not all of them. One of them was called Civilization, which was a plea for peace and American neutrality. It was set in a mythical country, and it was dedicated to the mothers of those who died in World War One.
Oh, Jesus. Okay.
Wow. Okay. This was the film. It was in direct competition with D.W. Griffith's Intolerance.
Yeah.
And it roundly trounced Intolerance at the box office.
And yet, I don't think I've heard of it, whereas Intolerance I've heard of and seen.
Yeah.
Thomas Ince, he added a few more stages and an admin building to Triangle Studios, and then he sold his shares to Griffith and Sennett in 1918.
Okay.
So he cashed in.
He wanted to go out and do his own thing again. He enjoyed working independently. 3 years later, the studios were acquired by Goldwyn Pictures, which then became Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, and that meant that things like Gone with the Wind, King Kong, and Citizen Kane were filmed on the studios that Thomas Ince had helped build.
That's crazy because it's like, that's the fucking place.
He then went back to work for himself. He formed Thomas H. Ince Studios. And he made a lot of significant pictures, but by this point, this was getting to like the early 20s. By this point, the studio system was taking over, and there wasn't
the system
really,
he helped create.
He helped create it, but there was no real room for him as an independent producer when Paramount had started up, and or what was to be Paramount had started up, and the same with Metro MGM and stuff. So he ended up kind of like his output slowed down, and then on his 44th. birthday or around then, he was invited to celebrate his birthday on the Oneida, which was the yacht of William Randolph Hearst. Now,
amazing.
The official cause of death is heart failure. So maybe there's no reason to dispute that, but the reason that this has sort of like taken hold and become a massive. I suppose, maybe is this our first conspiracy? It probably is.
It might be.
A lot of people think that Randolph Hearst shot him and then used his significant media sway to cover it up.
That's the sort of thing William Randolph Hearst would write about anyone else, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he shot him and covered it up.
I don't understand, actually, because also apparently, so the sequence of events are...
Yeah.
Well, he was invited...
That sway... is a lot of sway. If we're going to go with that sway of saying he shot him and then he said it was a heart failure, like, you've got to be in the room with the coroner pointing a gun in his face and being like, write down heart failure you're going to have heart failure, if you know what I'm talking about.
No, but there's like that doctor of Trump who was like, oh, yeah, he's normal weight. I'm his doctor, so I know.
Oh, so he's just getting a lot of money.
And he's 6'3" and he's really healthy. So like, I guess you can make any doctor. Yeah, he's got big giant flapping hands. I bet you can make a doctor say anything.
I think William Randolph Hearst was the one man that could have done this.
If anyone could do it, it was him.
So like, if this story was anybody else and they were like, oh, somebody, yeah, no, someone shot him and then tried to pass it off as heart failure, I'd call bullshit. Yeah. But William Randolph Hearst, I could kind of like, everything I know about William Randolph Hearst, I can kind of like think that he had enough sway over everything at this point. Yeah. I reckon he probably could have got away with this. And I'm not saying that is what happened.
Yeah. Not only is this our first conspiracy, but you are almost convinced that that is a big deal for me. Because it is quite interesting to see you go from like, nah, 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 to be like, but...
Well, okay.
We should call this episode Shitters and Kane.
I don't think I'm not saying that this is what happened. No, but,
of course.
But it's William Randolph Hearst, and I could believe it.
Right.
That's as good as an admission as any.
if anything came out and it proved, like let's say 3-4 years from now, 100 years after the case, some files get released.
Of course.
And it's like William Randolph Hearst did it. I'd be like, I am not surprised.
That's crazy.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right. But well, let's get to it.
But I am not saying that is what happened. So, okay. Thomas Ince and Randolph Hearst, they've been negotiating a deal under which Hearst's Cosmopolitan Productions would use Ince's studio.
Okay.
So Hearst had visited Ince at his home on November the 15th and invited him for a weekend cruise on his yacht to say happy birthday and to work out the details of the deal.
Yeah.
According to Ince's wife, who was called Nell, Thomas took a train down to San Diego where he joined the guests the next morning. At dinner the Sunday night, the group celebrated his birthday, but then apparently he suffered an acute bout of indigestion because he'd had too many almonds and champagne.
Almonds and champagne.
Almonds
wow.
and champagne.
Well, this guy lived a life.
Apparently they were forbidden for him because he had peptic ulcers. So he shouldn't
have
that.
You can't. Hey, what are you doing? Thomas, you can't have almonds and champagne.
He got peptic ulcers.
Listen, I want his handful of almonds and then I'll wash it down with champagne. Hey. Just you try and stop me, bitch. Oh my God, he's out of control.
It's my birthday. I can do what I want.
This will be on the front page tomorrow.
Hey, Pulitzer, get a shot of this, huh? I mean, almonds I'm drinking.
He'd had too many almonds and champagne, fuck's sake.
But we've had plenty of doctors that turned out to not know what the fuck they were talking about. Last week, William Desmond Taylor got shot in the back and they said it was...
They said...
They were like, this man has eaten an almond.
So this doctor is no different?
Tell you did know what he was doing, though. Harold Shipman got stuff done. You can't deny it.
Where were we?
Oh, yeah. We're talking about bad doctors.
Yes.
All right?
Oh, yeah.
So because he wouldn't have the salted almonds or the champagne, he shouldn't have had them, but he did. So he got indigestion. And then he was accompanied by Dr. Goodman, who was a licensed... He was licensed, but a non-practicing physician.
Goodman by name. That's it, though. It's just Goodman by name. I'm not a good doctor at all.
These days, he'd be called a health guru.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
He got off the yacht, and with Dr. Goodman, they travelled to a hotel, and they were given medical treatment by a second doctor and a nurse. Ince then summoned his wife.
Yeah, because he's like, I don't trust this Goodman. He's a fucking sham. He's about the same medical credentials as Dr. Spaceman from 30 Rock.
Dr. Spaceman.
And he summoned his wife and his own doctor, Ida Cowan Glasgow.
Ida Cow.
Ida Cow in Glasgow. I feel like that's a pun. Is it a pun? It sounds like a pun.
Who'd you call if you want to keep your moose hidden? Ida Cow in Glasgow. Fuck's sake.
Fuck, it is a pun.
That was a really... Suze, for somebody who doesn't do puns, that was a swift pun.
That was
a reverse-engineered pun.
Yeah.
I'm very versatile comedian and I can do all the different types of comedy, including puns.
Listener, she did that. While ill.
I'm not ill, I just ate bad hummus and feel sick.
I'm really stuck on that. That's a really good reverse pun. That's going to stay with me. That's really going to stay with me.
Like, you can't just say, you can't say what Sue said as a joke and the punchline be, Haida Keo in Glasgow, because people
would
go,
need the whole conversation before.
Yeah, exactly. You need the whole.
Not my fault. It's not my fault. You don't get it.
Basically, what she's done there is Suze has invented the Tarantino joke where it's told out of order for it to be funny.
Yeah. You basically made a new style of bit.
I'm very versatile comedian, and I invent a whole new style of comedy sometimes by accident.
That's incredible.
So they all met in Del Mar.
At the hotel.
Then they went back to Ince's home in Los Angeles, and he died. That's the official story. Apparently he had heart failure.
Are there any doctors in hospitals in the 20s? Because the impression is that they go to hotels.
They're all in hotels, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so this is kind of where the conspiracy probably started. And when I say probably, I mean certainly.
Isn't this where the thread of it starts? Or is this where, like, the most
whole thing,
evidence...
listen, bear in mind. So this official story, he fell ill on the boat because he had almonds.
He went to a hotel
in Del Mar where another... He went with the doctor to this hotel in Del Mar where another doctor was there, plus his own personal doctor came to get him. Then they went home and he died. The next day, the front page of the Los Angeles Times ran a story with the headline, "Movie producer shot on Hearst yacht."
What?
Oh my God.
So straight away they're like, right, there we go. Oh shit. So that's it. So basically there's the official story, which we've just heard. And then, like, I asked someone to try.
That was in the morning papers. In the evening edition, those headlines were vanished. Official obituaries were published with the official story of the heart disease. But he was shot. That came out of nowhere.
Yeah, there wasn't
First of all, where did they get the story that he got shot?
Yeah.
And then after that, they corrected themselves and it was all this official story. Now, that could have been, we made a mistake, he wasn't shot. It could have also been there was a tip-off that he actually got shot.
Yeah.
And they ran this story that wasn't the official version that was supposed to be run. And then someone got to them and was like, no, he didn't get shot.
Because that comes out of nowhere. Like, no one just makes up, oh, he got shot.
It feels weird, isn't it?
Yeah. It feels weird to be like, okay, so what happened? He probably got shot or something. And then someone writes that.
Nell, who's his widow.
Yeah.
She just left the country Europe about 7 months later.
Oh, right.
Just several conflicting stories started circulating about the actual incident. Because also on the boat... was Charlie Chaplin.
Fucking hell, this is a proper party.
Yeah, man.
It's not a party until Chaplin arrives.
Yeah, exactly, mate.
Chaplin arrives and falls over and is like, boo! Hi, everyone. He's English, so he's like, hello, everybody. Does his speech from The Great Dictator and everyone's like, oh, virtue signaler.
Here we go.
Do you like my moustache? I based it on Adolf Hitler.
So Chaplin's valet, a guy named Terechi Kono, and he claimed...
White guy, right?
he claimed to have seen Ince taken from the yacht to shore via a stretcher, and he said that he was bleeding from a bullet wound.
This is the valet saying this, right?
The valet said that.
But does this turn out that valet had a mysterious payment of $5,000 put in his account by the name of William Randolph Burst?
No, he didn't. But I think that might have been because they were like, who's going to believe this Japanese guy? because the story spread amongst all of the domestic workers throughout Beverly Hills from Terechi Kono saying, no, he had a bullet wound. I saw him get taken off the boat and he had a bullet wound.
Fucking hell, okay.
Oh, right. So is it a lot of like, yeah, okay. No, I mean, maybe he did.
So, and also that would explain where the Los Angeles Times got
the story from.
He got shot.
I quite like that it was like spread out through all the kind of just the people, you know, the valets and the chauffeurs.
Yeah, man,
and
the key workers.
Yeah. Exactly. They fucking
can't live
the
without
truth.
The key workers. Thank you, key workers.
During the funeral, the Los Angeles Times, maybe trying to make up for this, they noted that his casket, it was left open. He had an open casket funeral for 1 hour to afford friends and studio employees.
And there was a big bullet hole in his face.
Nobody said there was a bullet hole, but that doesn't mean he was shot in the head.
Because
you've got to remember, because there's no reason to doubt the story that he was taken on land to a hotel and then died at home.
But that
doesn't necessarily negate the fact that he was shot.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just his idea that he was shot in the head. He might not have been shot in the head.
Yeah.
One of the things is that apparently Hearst shot him, mistaking him for Chaplin, and Hearst had it in for Chaplin and was trying to shoot Chaplin.
Who's going to shoot Chaplin?
Why did he hate Chaplin?
For like a joke? Or for japes?
Maybe because wasn't Hearst quite conservative because Chaplin was like uber left wing, wasn't he?
I'm going to have a party, right? And here's what I'm going to do, see? I'm going to shoot Chaplin on this boat. You're going to shoot the most famous man
famous
in the world?
Famous movie star, yeah.
Are you going to invite him there alone so there are no witnesses? No, I'm going to have a party.
I'm going to have a party, see?
Oh, no. And there'll be almonds, there'll be champagne, the lot.
Well, this does sound like a party. I think I'll go.
Charlie Chaplin arrives and is like, free broadband for everybody. And Hearst like, Chaplin.
Chaplin. And he pulls out the gun and in slow motion in steps in the way. And he's like, pow. Yeah.
Suze, do you know who Luella Parsons is?
No. It's a good name, though.
She was a scriptwriter. But she was also the very first American movie columnist.
Oh. She was the head of Hopper before head of Hopper.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay.
She was she became a hugely influential figure in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Her columns were read by 20 million people in 400 newspapers worldwide. She was like the queen of Hollywood gossip. Anyway, the reason I bring her up is that she was apparently on board the Oneida when this happened.
Ooh. I see.
When the Oneida sailed, she was the movie columnist based in New York for one of Hearst's newspapers. And not long after this happened, Randolph Hearst gave her a lifetime contract and expanded her syndication.
Mm. Which, I see.
You know, maybe he was doing that to be nice. And some people have suggested that's because she had championed one of his mistresses, like in her columns. Or it could have also been a, if you keep quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably I will like set that. You for life.
So
another story circulated that William Randolph Hearst provided Nell, the widow, with a trust fund just before she left for Europe.
Okay.
And that he paid off their mortgage on the huge apartment they had in Hollywood.
Oh.
Ooh, shit.
Either way, the widow was left a very, 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 very rich woman.
She would have been left rich anyway by Ince, surely. I imagine he would have
Yeah, and also, apparently, to counter this claim about paying off the mortgage, supposedly there are reports that she already owned it and had built on the grounds where they had it anyway. So there was no mortgage to pay off, according to some.
Okay.
Because William Randolph Hearst was challenged on it years and years and years and years later. They said he spoke to a journalist and they brought up the rumour that he'd murdered Thomas Ince. And he went, not only am I innocent of this murder, so is everybody else. That's what he said.
All right. Fucking hell. That again is like, do you hate my sister? No, and I never cheated on you with her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
What?
I have a follow-up question.
Yeah. Too late.
The upshot of all this was, because this kind of took hold, and also there was that conflicting report of Chaplin's valet, and also that headline in the Los Angeles Times must have come from somewhere.
Yeah.
Before then being redacted. It's kind of like fueled this idea that not everything that went on was as it was reported.
Right, yeah. Right.
So it became a myth, basically. It's like, it is an unsolved mystery. It's like, what the fuck happened? Because he died at the height of his career, really. Even though he died, what he'd helped set up in Hollywood is still felt today.
Yeah. Mm.
But unfortunately, his death kind of like cut short the fact that people will remember him.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, of course.
Maybe. And also, get this, he might have died from almonds. So...
Well, aren't almond skin got cyanide in it?
I've heard this, but you have to consume like...
Loads.
Two large sacks full of almonds.
Yeah, but Thomas Ince was a greedy boy.
That's true. He could have just been sat there.
The fact that he died in such a publicised incident on Randolph Hearst's yacht, that kind of like overshadowed the fact that he was this pioneering Hollywood figure.
Well, that's always going to overshadow the story, isn't it? The scandal will always overshadow the person. Because that's all we remember. It's like, unfortunately, like how Monica Lewinsky is who she is because of the scandal, not the fact that she's also a fucking incredible person.
She's like a real educated and witty woman. But what she's known for is, hey, remember when she got the president's cum on her dress?
And it's just like,
guys, that was so long ago. I promise she's got so much to offer.
Yeah, Jesus.
This theory that he shot him, mistaken him for Chaplin.
I mean, that's a pretty big mistake to make. They look very different.
Well, it's because apparently like one of Hearst's mistresses was on the yacht. And apparently Chaplin was having it off with her and he was jealous about that.
But he's got more than one mistress. He's one of his mistresses. Jesus. Yeah. Like, I'm not condoning this behavior, but don't shoot somebody because one of your mistresses...
They had it off with your woman.
I don't think that's why men like William Randolph Hearst collect mistresses. I don't think it's because I just don't think they want to share, you know?
Yeah.
And they probably... Chaplin had it all, didn't he? Because Chaplin was really funny and famous and rich, but he was also like handsome.
Yeah.
He was a pretty man, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a good looking boy. He looked like Joe McElderry, who won the X Factor a few years ago.
you're interested, Thomas Ince does have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh, does he?
Does he?
Oh, that's pretty nice. Okay, that's good. I'm
when
glad
did
that
they make... Yeah, I'm so chuffed for him. Inceville paid off.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no, I mean, like, you could take at face value the story of
the
came,
of the double doctor.
He fell ill because of the almonds and then died at home. And do you know what? If I had a gun to my head, I'd probably be like, yeah, that's what happened. But the idea of the valet seeing him with a bullet wound, and then, of course, the fact that William Randolph Hearst could report whatever he wanted and have sway over people because of that.
When you own the newspapers, yeah sure, and you can do whatever you want.
I'm not even saying that William Randolph Hearst is the guy that shot him, but maybe he just didn't want this idea that somebody shot somebody on his boat.
Yeah, you know. I'm with you on this. I'm not. He may have shot him, but he also may not have. Where that lies is like where he sits in the control sphere of all of this, if that is even a terminology, the control sphere. It sounds like those things in Jurassic World that they drive around to make sure they don't get eaten by dinosaurs.
Oh, the
the gyrosphere things, yeah.
Yeah. Great movie.
It's the second one bothers me a lot. Anyway, we're not getting to that. Yeah, if he did or if he didn't, it's not like it's moot, but his involvement in running the sort of media and stuff is a thing that kind of is the real part you should focus on, I guess, is because then it becomes about like, well, whatever happened, he's the one that is tightening the screws and making sure things are as they are. Because like you said, with this valet story, let's say that comes out, right? And maybe he doesn't even own that paper. He's like, fuck, these fucking guys, they know about it. And so he just goes in and he's like, and he just floods it with every other paper. Like, he just buys every other paper out and he goes like, this is the story, this is what we're printing, nobody else print, this is garbage. A valet star, you know who that guy is? That guy's from Japan. Do you guys believe those guys?
Yeah. You can't believe a word.
And also, I mean, this is why I brought up the fact that he was quite an unethical media baron when the American-Spanish War was kicking off.
Absolutely.
Because like he was driven by profits, money, power, like rather than having a moral core. So I felt like that was an important detail because that's the sort of bloke he could be.
Yeah. It's all about selling papers, man, and that's it. Is that like, and I mean,
and
even,
what
even
does
so.
This Japanese valet of Chaplin have to gain by saying, he saw him with a bullet wound?
Yeah, nothing. Absolutely.
Like, Chaplin's not going to have said, make sure you tell them that he had a bullet wound. It'll be a laugh. I'm a funny man.
It feels like a 1920s version of Succession. That's what it feels like.
Yes.
It's so
crazy. Oh my God.
This is so
it
nuts.
Is, isn't it? It's like that. It was the Wild West. They were essentially in the early days of taming it at this point.
They
built their studio there so that it's as far away from New York as possible, and it's essentially still pretty new.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of lawlessness.
This is like only, you know, the electricity was what, turn of that century, so that was like, what, 1890s was it or something like that? I can't exactly remember, but it wasn't far off.
Yeah,
and then everything started like, you know, obviously like doubling in technology, started to like be, you know, it was faster and better, quicker.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you said, it was like, maybe it was like 30 years ago, they were riding into towns and shooting people in the face and stealing gold.
That's
it. So it's like, yeah, it's really, you're absolutely right. Like, this kind of thing would happen and no one could stop you. Because also, there was no media moguls. There wasn't somebody before him.
There was Hearst, and that's that.
He was like, oh, there's no one. Okay, well, it's my fucking word then. Yeah, that's crazy.
And it's kind of like why I think he's the reason, because we've seen a lot of stuff that he did, that no one trusts Murdoch and no one trusts...
Yeah, and
why and he's a good guy. He's such a nice guy, and everyone won't trust him.
He's just a kindly old grandfather.
They just look like evil people. Do you know what I mean? Like, you look at them and you're like, my God, they look like,
they're definitely like reverse Dorian Gray, aren't they? Going like, there's a painting in the attic that just stays beautiful.
I mean, Hearst.
While you continue to, every evil thing you've done shows just, on your fucking face.
Yeah. Wow. And then you look at their face and you're like, wow, they've done a lot of shit.
Wow, you've done some real bad things, haven't you?
I'm looking at a photo of Hearst and...
I tell you what, he doesn't look like Orson Welles, does he? I think he'd have liked to.
Yeah, it's the way he's looking at that photo. I almost feel like for a split second he's going to, like, looking off, but for a split second he's going to go, I did it, see? Like, he'll just look straight to camera, say it, and look back.
It's such a...
Well, Randolph Hearst was alive when Citizen Kane came out.
He didn't die till the 50s. Yeah. He was. They say he's a large part of why the movie was not acclaimed on its release. I mean, it was nominated for a few Oscars, but it's known to... It revolutionised cinema, yet at the time... A lot of the reviews were bad, and it was apparently because Hearst had threatened a lot of publications, threatened a lot of studios. He had that much power, even in whenever Citizen Kane was released, 1941, I think, 1941.
Fucking hell, man. That's so...
If you haven't watched Citizen Kane, if you haven't watched Citizen Kane, and you think, yeah, but it's just this old 80-year-old movie, it's going to be so dry... Watch it. It's a fucking banger. It's awesome. It holds up real well.
I think people have this sort of aversion to films that are that old.
Yeah.
But some of them are M is
M's
insane.
Fantastic. I mean, M's 1933,
I think.
Yeah. 33. It's nearly 90 years old.
Maybe 31.
Duck Soup.
Duck Soup's fantastic. Most of the Marx Brothers are. I have fond memories.
Marx Brothers are great. Certainly, the first seven movies are amazing. Duck Soup is still the best anti-war satire out there, including Starship Troopers.
I won't put Starship Troopers in that. What's it? Sunset Boulevard was one I put off for such a long time.
Right.
And then I watched it and I was like, what's wrong with me?
It's such a banger.
It's so good. Yeah.
Even down to this, the posthumous narration.
Yeah.
That was the first time that had been done, I think.
Uh-huh.
So yeah. I guess they were churning them out as well. They were fucking churning them out. Like, it was a studio machine. It was a machine.
Oh,
well, it kind of really kicked up in the 20s. They were making silent films from, the late 1890s.
Yeah.
And then...
This is when they would get a beautiful girl who they'd seen in modelling a magazine, in a magazine, bring her to Hollywood, give her a new name, often, pull all her teeth out and give her false teeth.
Yeah.
Including not having ones at the back, so they'd have fantastic cheekbones, and go, right, you're an actress now. And some of them couldn't act, so they'd just be
under
contract.
Or talk because of the teeth.
Yeah.
But they didn't need
to. There were silent movies anyway.
Silent movies. Fine,
Right. So what are we... I think we're all sort of somewhat agreed. I think it feels very much like Hearst.
One thing I might say is that because he had himself helped to engineer by sensationalizing these Hollywood scandals like Fatty Arbuckle and William Desmond Taylor, there might have been a desire for revenge to do something on his own yacht.
Oh.
And then he was just able to cover that up. So, I'm not saying that if Thomas Ince was shot, that William Hearst shot him.
No.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it happened on his yacht after all of these scandals that he had helped.
Yeah.
It looks terrible for
him. So if he was shot, then maybe that was deliberate as a kind of fuck you, Randolph Hearst.
Yeah, right? I think he probably didn't shoot him, but he definitely engineered...
We probably didn't have it in him in the same way as, sorry to bring him up, but Hitler didn't have it in him to kill someone in front of him.
No.
Charles Manson didn't.
No, he got a bunch of people to do it for him, yeah.
You don't always have it in you, but it doesn't mean
he'd only be able to punch their knees, wouldn't he?
Yeah, little Manson. Me and Charlie Manson the same height. He's so cute. Put him in your pocket.
I reckon, Suze, actually, you could with the right makeup. I reckon you could do a really good Charles Manson photo.
Oh my god! Thank you. I'll do it next live stream. I'll be Charles Manson in Thursday's live stream. I'll be Charles Manson
when you do the makeup tutorial. Don't tell them who you're turning yourself into.
And then just draw the little thing on your forehead.
Cutting a swastika into my forehead.
Oh my.
That's hey guys, so what you're going to need is we're going to need a lot of brown eyeshadow.
Yeah, and then we're going to need a fresh double razor. So.
It's technically a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as mysterious as the two we've just covered. But I do feel like if we're going to chart our way through Hollywood, I had to do it.
He's an important linchpin, I think, for the other two as well, and that he is relevant for those first two.
Yeah.
And the fact that he had such control over the media at that time, I think is such a...
Even if he didn't say it, And even if that has been distorted, that whole thing about you furnish the pictures, I'll furnish the war.
It's too damning, isn't it? It's too much.
It's not just that, but I mean also what a quote.
Yeah.
And even if he didn't say it, it's kind of what he ended up doing anyway.
Exactly.
That's right.
So
Suze, what do you think?
Have you got anything from the archives?
Yes. I do. Ooh. Okay, so they're largely forgotten about now, but there was a singing duo that formed based on this event. They formed in the mid-20s, and they are called Almonds and Champagne. Oh. And they're... You may have heard some of their stuff on advertising. They did Gillette, the best a man can get. That was Almonds and Champagne. Oh. But yeah, they...
I have heard them. They did the original Two Unlimited No Limit song. That was them. Two Unlimited covered them. Yeah,
that was them. Yes. Oh. They were well known for their close harmonies. Mm. And they did a song based on this. And I think they got to the bottom of it. So, do you want to hear it?
Yeah, yes, please. I'd love to. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Hey, Luella Parsons, get a load of this. I'm Armand.
And I'm Champagne.
And we got a story for you. We were at the party of William Randall Hearst. Wall to wall, good and hearty, we were fit to burst. The stars are all here. Wait, what the hell's happening?
Oh, my God, Armand.
It's Charlie Chaplin. I'm weak at the knees. His ballet's Japanese. This party's going off with a bang. Next thing we know, Thomas isn't well. He's bent double O. He's going through hell. I just love his movie, Champagne.
Armand's me too.
Hope he'll be okay or I'll be so blue. Is he sick?
He's hot.
Champagne, he's been shot. This party's going off with a bang.
Step breakdown.
What's on your head, Armand?
It's a hat, man. Woo!
Llewellyn's got the scoop, Thomas Ince is heart failed. A star-studded groove, nobody going to jail. Ince's death is suspicious.
We heard a gun go off.
Disney Plus is Hamilton.
His star's Jonathan Groff. Thomas wasn't strong. Drinking game gone wrong. This song is ending now.
There we go. That was Almonds and Champagne.
That
yeah.
Fantastic.
I acquired that actually. It was at a car boot sale. It was just a big box of old Now albums. It's like, now that's what I call music 4 to about 29. I was like, oh, yes, please. Yeah. And in one of the boxes, I opened up Now 18. And I was like, oh, fuck's sake, there's just this blank cassette. But it was all the best of Almonds and Champagne.
Whoa.
And I'm really chuffed that I've got it.
You got to send me that copy of No Limit, because I really want to hear that.
The original 1920s version of No Limit.
There's no limit to reach for the sky.
No.
Oh, my God.
There's no limit.
This is my vote for Almonds and Champagne to be the next Mystery on the Rocks in joke.
Please. Absolutely. It's too good. I love it so much.
Oh, and,
no,
1920 singing duo that did the original versions of 90s techno songs. Please.
Oh, thanks so much for listening again to this, our little mini-series. We hope you're enjoying it so far. If you are, let us know on the socials.
It's going down quite well so far, according to you lot. According to you lot.
According to you.
And depending on when you listen to this, it might not be tonight, but every Thursday at 8 p.m. British summertime, we're on Twitch, www.twitch.tv/mysteryontherocks.
Yes, you can catch us. You can get on our socials, Mystery on the Rocks, that's spelled R-O-X. That's on Twitter and on Instagram. You want to send us an email, mysteryontherocks@gmail.com. You want to find us, we're all individually on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. We all stream now as well. Chris, you're Twitch.
Do we?
Yeah, we do, mate. Yeah, we do. We got to advertise.
Yeah, all right, we do.
Chris _ Stokes. Suze is Suze Kempner. So Twitch.
Suze Kempner.
Suze Kempner, and I'm Twitch.tv. Twitch.tv/MasoodMiles. Find us all there. And like I said, on Thursdays, so you can catch it. Oh, fucking! If you like the show, leave a review. Give it loads of stars and say,
give it me
no stars. Thanks for listening as always, and enjoy your fucking lives.
Bye, everybody. Bye. Thanks for listening. Bye. Bye.
It's been a joy.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.